Hey, everybody. Welcome to Therapy Rocks, a personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Signa Darpinian, co-author of No Way, A Teen's Guide to Positive Body Image, Food, and Emotional Wisdom. Today, we're discussing the teen brain, and specifically how brain development is different in teen girls versus teen boys. Joining us today for this conversation is someone who knows a lot about the brain in terms of both age and gender, Dr. Luann Brizendine. Dr. Brizendine is a neuropsychiatrist, researcher, clinician, and professor at the University of California, San Francisco, UCSF. She's also the author of two best-selling books, The Female Brain and, more recently, The Male Brain. The Female Brain was also loosely adapted as a romantic comedy movie of the same name, and Dr. Brizendine served as the inspiration for the film's main character. Welcome to the show, Dr. Brizendine.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Brizendine, the conversation has shifted since your pioneering research on the female brain. How do you see your work in the context of people who don't believe in binary gender roles?
Well, I think that one of the reasons I wrote The Female Brain, The Male Brain is to look at what happens in terms of, you know, the biology of how things unfold. There are many different ways, and when you look at it for an individual, so let's go back and talk about just what happens. So at the moment of conception, the difference between the male and female brain is obviously if the sperm is carrying an X chromosome, it will end up making a female. If it's carrying a Y, it'll end up making male. And from the moment of conception on, then we are going to be either XX or XY in general. There are a few exceptions, of course. And then by about 8 weeks of gestation, the fetus, the male fetus, the tiny testicles in the male start pumping out huge amounts of testosterone that marinate the brain in testosterone, changing it into male as well as the body into male. What happens for the female is like basically develops unperturbed by testosterone. So by the time we're all born, we come out usually the typical male pattern or female pattern, both in our body and our brain. Of course, there are exceptions to this, and there's all kinds of interesting research going on now to try and look at what it is that happens when you end up being either same-sex attracted, or you end up being gender fluid, or you end up being born in the body of a female, but you feel that your identity is male, or vice versa, you're born as a male, but you feel female. So the transgender brain is something that has gotten a lot of attention and is just starting to be looked at in medical science to see what some of the differences are.
So it's still in its infancy, but it's definitely being focused on.
Absolutely, because we know it's a real phenomenon and it unfolds in certain ways. And it's about 1 in 300 people are trans. So it's a biological difference that is not terribly rare. It's actually fairly common.
So what's the age range we're talking about with a teen brain?
So if you're talking about the teen girl brain and the teen boy brain, usually the concept of the female brain in terms of starting into the transition we call puberty, usually about age 9 years old to up to 19. And if we're talking about the male brain in terms of its onset for puberty, usually 18 months to 24 months later than the female. So we're talking about males from about age 11 up to 21.
You may remember that you helped my co-authors and I a couple of years ago in our teen workbook, No Way, in the emotions chapter. And in that excerpt, you mentioned that the teen female brain will experience estrogen, progesterone surges that will activate oxytocin, which drives them more to bonding, whereas the teen male brain increases in testosterone, like you mentioned, and vasopressin in the teen years, driving them to focus on things like pecking order and a need for respect, which has shown to decrease talking. Can you say more about these differences in the teen brain?
Of course. Yeah, let's look at the female first, because what happens is, and it's particular in humans. So right after birth, for about the first 12 to 24 months in the female, her ovaries start to produce huge amounts of estrogen up to adult female levels for the first couple of years. And then it goes down to very low levels in the period we call childhood. So from about age 2 to about age 8, 9, or 10, the female ovaries are kept quiet. The brain, the pituitary, is also just keeping the estrogen at a very low level until about 2 years before the period starts is what we call kind of the beginnings of the ping, ping, ping from the pituitary down to both the adrenal glands and the ovaries starting to make sex hormones. And they gradually increase, increase, increase a little bit. If you look at girls, you can tell, you know, what a breast bud is, where the breast starts to get a little bit of breast tissue. And that when that is happening, that's kind of the beginnings of the onset of the hormones in the female that are going to rise from age, usually onsetting about age 9 or 10 to get the breast buds. And then not until, for Caucasian girls, it's about age 11 is the onset, the average onset of menses, and for Hispanic girls. Then at about age earlier by 1 year, African-American girls about age 10 is the average for onset of menstruation. And for Asian girls, it's closer to age 12. We don't know what the difference is. We think it may have to do with kind of intrinsic body fat that is different in different races. But the onset of that ping, ping, ping from the pituitary starts a couple of years before the period starts. And then what happens, of course, is once the period starts and ovulation starts, once the eggs start popping out, the progesterone will start. So you get that menstrual cycle wave of going up in the first 2 weeks for estrogen. And then when ovulation happens and the progesterone wave comes up, and all of those things are making females more emotionally tuned, let's say. They're emotionally tuned to others. And it starts to pour out much, much more oxytocin, which is called the love and bonding hormone. So girls will start to become very attached to their girlfriends and very attached and get hopeless crushes on, you know, in either boys or girls in your life. And that's the time if you are opposite sex attracted, you start being attracted to the opposite sex at that time. And if you're same sex attracted, it unfolds just the same way. You become same sex attracted during that period. So there's a lot of interest during that hormonal wave that goes up in girls and becoming very focused on trying to look attractive to become, you know, and figuring out how to look beautiful, how to look attractive, how to draw the attention of whoever you're sexually interested in towards you. And it's not even experienced for most girls at that age as quote unquote like sexual attraction per se. It's just a very big interest in like wanting to become a little flirty and noticing that their bodies are becoming objects of attraction to either the opposite sex or same sex. So that's the unfolding of the female signa.
I certainly remember this stage, and it's interesting because, of course, I remember being in the bathroom for hours at a time, which is a little embarrassing. But I specifically remember my father saying, "Signa, do you have to be in there for so long?" And I just remember the prepping, the plucking, the primping. And what's fascinating to me about your work is that if we understood the biology better, you know, like you and I have talked about when you helped us with the teen workbook, if we understood the biology and how it dictates our behavior, we could change our behavior more easily, meaning not buy into it as much. So there may be an increased need to be desired, but if we knew where that was coming from and why, we could intentionally focus more on what we desire versus being desired. Is that true? Is the brain, you know, malleable enough to reshape this time?
Well, I think anything that gives us insight, you know, into what's happening, that helps us stand aside a little bit and look at our behavior.
Well said.
And understand it is very, very helpful. But I think it also reduces shame. And I think it's helpful for parents too, and teachers as well, to understand this, because then it's normalized and it's not something to be criticized. You just assume that it's normal. Like, you know, if your parent, your dad understood that this is just so normal for you to be doing this and trying to, you know, I can remember trying to figure out how to look attractive, you know, looking at the pictures in the magazines in those days. I mean, now you guys have just everything in your face on YouTube and internet and Snapchat, you know, so, and, you know, you have all these filters on all kinds of things so you can change your appearance. It's, you know, the options are legion these days. So there's a very big, I think, relief and feeling normalized and feeling that it's not something that's abnormal when you understand that the hormones, the reason we have hormones at all, hormones cause a behavior. For example, the hunger hormones. The hunger hormones make you eat. You know, the thirst hormones make you drink. You know, so there's behaviors that are required for our survival, and reproduction is a big part of our survival. So what we're really talking about is human behaviors that are involved with human survival that are caused by hormones. Mother Nature was not going to leave this one to chance. That's why we have all these hormones making the behavior happen.
I see. Okay. And then what about the teen male brain?
So the boy at birth, of course, comes out, and for the first year after birth, his testicles pump out huge amounts of testosterone as well, up to almost a male adult levels. And what we think that all those extra hormones are doing in that early stage is it's just the finishing school for all the reproductive and all the brain part, all the parts that are going to be required later for reproduction. So that's all being finished. And then for boys in the first 2 years after birth to about 1 year old, and girls about till 2 years old. The boy then goes again, his pituitary stops signaling the testicles to make more testosterone, and basically goes down very low level of testosterone all during the boy's childhood, up until about age for him, around 10 years old. Then the pituitary starts to wake up the testicles, wake up the adrenal glands, and pump out lots of sex hormones. The boys goes from, like, you know, goes up about times 250 between the ages of 10 and 15 years old. So it's quite a dramatic increase from 10 to 15 in testosterone, making the boy's penis grow, getting all of the hair, getting the deeper voice, stimulating all the circuits, the male brain circuits, making boys start to do things like what, you know, they're, one of the things about boys, they start to notice, they notice breasts everywhere all of a sudden, or they notice all kinds of female shapes. And some boys, before they realize it's a hormonal thing, they can feel a lot of shame about it or a lot of embarrassment about it, or feel like they're the only one, so they're becoming a pervert or something, until they realize all the other guys are also, you know, in the same thing. If it's same-sex attracted, then of course it will be, you know, interest in males at that time. And of course, if you're gender fluid for both, you know, for both sex, if you're gender fluid at this time, it doesn't mean that this isn't happening exactly the same way with your hormones. Your hormones are stimulating all of these brain tracks and all of your behaviors and interest in looking attractive or interest in figuring out your sexuality, just the same in all of the categories. So even if you're bi or gender fluid, you're going to end up having the same hormonal unfolding of your hormones and brain circuits.
And I remember from the book how you talked about the female brain has a wider emotional spectrum. And I remember this one specific part where a teen female might be like at the dinner table, for example, and she may pick up a cue or a facial expression that's more related to disappointment or not being accepted. Whereas you said the male teen brain can detect and read anger or threat more accurately.
Yeah, so they've done a lot of research on scanning the brains of teens while they're looking at like happy faces, sad faces, neutral faces, surprised faces, angry faces. And they find that males typically react very, very strongly to angry faces, more so than the females. Females, I mean, all humans react to an angry face pretty robustly, but males particularly react very strongly to that. And they don't react as strongly to a sad face or kind of a disappointed face, those more subtle expressions. And they will often read those faces even as being angry rather than being sad. So we don't understand why that is, that the hormones do this. And females start to, you know, pick up on subtleties like, you know, disappointment or sadness or someone, you know, who's about ready to cry, more so than teen boys do. So I think, you know, I think we shouldn't put everything just on the teen boys not being kind of emotionally connected, because they are very connected for things that might have to do with anger or pecking order.
Sometimes it reminds me of that iconic scene with Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver. Did you see Taxi Driver?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Remember that scene where he's, you know, standing in front of the mirror and mimicking an altercation? You talking to me? You talking to me? You know?
Yes. And so boys they start to kind of like posture. I mean, they're not in the mirror like plucking and primping as much, but they may be like, you know, standing in front of the mirror, kind of taking on, you know, different body stances or you know, testing out different looks or different gestures. So
I didn't make that connection until you just said that. So posturing more than the plucking and the primping.
Yeah. So girls are plucking and primping and boys are posturing.
I am a therapist with a caseload that's primarily teenagers, and I would say primarily female teenagers. Can you say more about why the teen female brain responds in such a big way to being excluded?
So one of the things to remember is that our strongest emotions have to do with things that are related to survival instinct. And survival instinct, is it for a teen girl, is that you want to be part of the group, because, you know, if you were excluded from the group, let's say, and, you know, the group exclusion is painful for a reason, because it would mean that if you're excluded from a group, in a different era, in the Stone Age, you might have not survived, because you need the group for protection and for food and for everything, for your survival. So we are very much wired for wanting to be able to be included and belonging to the group. And so one of the most painful things, I mean, it's painful for all ages, but it becomes exquisitely painful for teens, because their whole world is starting to become their peer group. And the protection and safety of their parents are something that they have, that they're trying very hard to leave behind. They don't want the protection of their parents. You know, they don't want the protection of their parents. They don't want the attention of their parents. What they want is they want to be belonging and part and accepted by and included in their peer group.
And that's primarily the teen female brain.
Well, males have their own, you know, the issue of being included in the group is very important for all human beings.
Okay.
So males definitely have it too. They may just have a different way about it. Males tend to be very hierarchical, and they've done lots of studies. They did a study where they took a bunch of like first grade boys, they put them in a group together, seven or eight of them, and they watched how they established a pecking order, and they wrote down all which number, what boy was the alpha and all the way down. And they got them together about 2 years later, and immediately at about age 11 or 12, they went right back into the same, you know, pecking order. Interesting, even though they hadn't been at the same schools or anything. So this issue of hierarchy and pecking order for boys, it's important for girls too, but it's not quite the level of importance as it is for boys, the hierarchy of, like, you know, and being deferential to the the other boys that are not the alpha being deferential to the boy on top. And this, of course, is a lot. There's a huge amount of bullying that's, you know, goes on amongst boys at this stage.
Back to the teen female brain, I'm assuming that the broad emotional spectrum, so the ability to read the group, know how to be, and to stay in the group, to stay strong. Why does it show up like that with the female and not the male?
For one thing, remember, I mean, there's that females got pregnant as soon as they were, very quickly from the time they became fertile.
I see.
So for females, it's having to do with the fact that they are not as strong
Got
physically,
it.
And that they need the physical protection of the group slightly more than the male does, and also that the security and protection during pregnancy and having an infant. Remember, human infants are born at, you know, at a very, very immature stage. They're not like little sheep or deer that just plop down and they're back up running within, you know, minutes. We have about 2 years of a nonverbal infant, and the female is going to have to emotionally read and understand what the baby needs for the first couple of years. And she's going to need support from the group of other women, other mothers, other women, other cousins, aunts, uncles. She's going to need to be in that for her own survival and the survival of the infant. So a lot of the things we see in female behavior, hormones, and brain in terms of inclusion or exclusion issues are kind of hardwired in there because of this whole issue about needing to be protected, also because of helpless infants.
And would understanding that help the teen female?
I think the part that would help the teen female right now is just to understand that inclusion and belonging is really hardwired into us in a way that has to do with our survival. I think at that level, it's important, you know, because we don't have our babies until older now. I think it doesn't make as much sense to us in our era, you know, as it would at a different time in history or even in some other cultures today. So I think the part of it is just that it is part of our natural survival instinct to need and want and figure out how to belong and not to be excluded.
I remember you saying in the book, try your best to not make your hormonal fluctuation your reality.
Right, exactly. And biology is destiny unless you know what it's doing to you.
I love that. What is one tip you'd give to parents dealing with the turbulent teen years, Dr. Brizendine?
Well, you know, they might want to read chapter 2 of the teen brain, the female brain, which is called the teen girl brain. I have given that to so many parents, and it's a helpful way to kind of have an easy and fun way to have a concept of what's really going on under the hood, because I think it's very, very difficult for parents when this happens, even though they went through it themselves, some of it. It's very, very hard to see your beloved kid go through struggles in their life. And then when you get into struggles with them, you feel like it's pretty hopeless. And so I think it's really important to maintain hope and get the facts and get information that can help you understand what's going on. And then you'll be able to communicate as a parent to your kid a greater sense of calm and hope that you all will get through this stage.
Thank you again for taking the time today. And how can our listeners find your work?
I'd like to recommend, you know, your local bookstore, but right now with the pandemic, it's probably easy just to order online. So, and I think they're both in audiobook if people just like to listen to them like a podcast or something.
Thank you for your time today, Dr. Brizendine.
And Signe, thanks for all you're doing for all of your patients and for having people understand more about what's going on with the male and female brain. I really appreciate your work very much.
Thank you for joining us today for another episode of Therapy Rocks. And a reminder that you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And feel free to contact me at www.signadarpinian.com. See you next month.